hi, everyone. I'm Lori, and I'm a love and fantasy addict and anorexic, very gratefully recovering in this program. As usual, I'm nervous to speak in front of my peers who've been such an enormous part of my recovery. So let me take a second to pray that God just work through me. This share is not about me. I pray, God, that you allow me to be of service, that you tell me the right words to say that'll be most of service, especially to the newcomer, but to everybody in the room. Thy will, not mine, be done. So during the meditation, I am sitting outside my apartment. I'm sitting outside in my courtyard. Normally I set up my desk, and actually I do a lot of my outreach calls sitting out here on the patio because I have a lot of beautiful plants, and I live in a beautiful neighborhood in LA, and I can see across the hill, and it looks like Italy, it looks like Greece. It's just beautiful. And beauty is a really wonderful motivator, like especially when it's very connected with higher power. And working this recovery has brought so much more beauty into my life. During the meditation, what came to me was, this is what recovery looks like for me today. It looks like me sitting here on my patio in a meeting with people who have saved my life, with people who are important to me, and also and being of service. And the other day, recovery was me sobbing and crying and shaking. That was what recovery looked like for me that day. So I want to thank Emily so much for asking me to speak. This is a meeting that I've been coming to for a year. This is a meeting that's been crucial for my recovery, and people in this meeting have saved my life. I'm 1 year off my bottom lines, which I've been sharing a lot about. Thank you so much. I couldn't have done it without everybody in this room and beyond. I want to share what my bottom lines are and why they are my bottom lines. My first bottom line is I do not have any contact with any of my qualifiers. And all of my qualifiers are not only blocked, but they're deleted. And as I like to say, this isn't 1995 anymore, so I don't know anybody's phone number, like back in the day. So I never knew their phone number. So once they're deleted, it's really gone. And that has been absolutely crucial for me. And I know it can be really hard for newcomers to go no contact with a qualifier. And one thing I like to think about, first of all, there's amazing speaker tapes on no contact. I'm happy to send them. Just send me a DM and I will send you all the no contact information. There's also a great no contact pamphlet that SLA has for download and for and a hard copy. The reason no contact is so important is not because I'm a punisher. It's not because I am saying, oh, you're a jerk and now you can't have contact with me. It's because I tend to be attracted to other sex and love addicts. And I cannot allow my sobriety to be hinged on the whim of somebody else deciding they want to contact me that day. Okay? That's how I fucking lose my mind. Sorry. Sometimes I curse, so I'm going to try not to curse. That's how I lose my mind. I'm not going to be susceptible to your addictive whims. And yes, I'm making a general statement by saying that all my qualifiers are addicts, but it's pretty much fair. It's pretty fair. So number one, I don't have any contact with any of my qualifiers. I heard this in a speaker tape the other day, and it's a phrase that goes around a lot, which is no new contact, no new hurt. And that's definitely very, very true for me. It's been a year since I've had contact with any of my qualifiers, and I don't regret it. And for me, it's very important to have a day count. I know not everybody does that, but for me, I count the days. I count the months. I count the hours. That helps me. It's usually something I suggest for newcomers, but, you know, I clearly seen that it doesn't work for everybody, and that's okay because this program's very individualized. My second no contact, which is one that is so corrosive and so deadly, is I do not info seek on any of my qualifiers.
That's 5 minutes. To me,
oh, great. Thank you so much. Great. 5 minutes down. Info seeking is deadly, in my opinion. It is so corrosive, it's so destructive to the soul. All of my qualifiers are blocked on every platform. I have to use social media for work, so not using it is not possible. But blocking my qualifiers is absolutely possible. And it's been a year since I did the block, unblock thing. They're blocked on every platform, Instagram being number one, email, TikTok, whatever. Anywhere I can block a qualifier, they're blocked. And I don't Google or look them up on any other platform. My third bottom line, which maybe doesn't sound like a typical bottom line, but it's very important for me because I'm recovering from avoidance and anorexia. And that is that I do not withdraw and isolate myself from people. The way that I learned to cope was to be hyper individual and hyper survivalist. And I learned that I'm a burden, that I'm horrible. That's like my internal dialogue that I've worked very hard to shift. And that secretly, like, everybody actually hates me and I cannot possibly reach out for help and I can't bother anyone and I can't burden anyone. But then there's also a part of me that says, I know the answer best, you know? I can't ask someone for help because I can figure it out best. And all of this is really rooted in anorexia, avoidance, and really low self-worth. So it's been a year since I have isolated from people. It's been a year since I've gone into a dark hole of extreme despair and depression. For the last year, I've been able to message with my God squad every day, text my girls every day. I have an amazing sponsor that I could not speak more highly of. And it's been a journey with her on my part because I'm very avoidant of her wisdom and her help, her grace, elegance, and talent. And over the last 3 months, I would say I've come out of my shell a lot and we've gotten closer. We've been able to do major, major step work. So no isolating from the people who actually want to make investments in us, because my disease goes, oh, you don't like me? Well, I'm attached to you, you know? I think those are the core of my bottom lines. I hope I was able to convey why they're so corrosive and destructive. For me, those are what I identified as deadly. And in this recovery, each fellow has to decide, you know, what's going to kill me the fastest. I need to eliminate those behaviors as soon as possible. I want to talk about some of my early attachment figures in my life and why and how those dysfunctional relationships manifested in what is second love addiction. My mom is very absent, very avoidant. My mom never said, I love you. And I'm not kidding when I say never. My mom did not hug me, coddle me, comfort me. In fact, she did the opposite. My mom, you know, and I'm saying this with grace for her and understanding that she has untreated trauma from her own childhood. I say this, my mom is a very, very rageful, violent person. She has a homicidal streak. I watched her try to kill my dad and she also tried to kill me. She has extreme fits of rage that are, you know, beyond explosive. And she's addicted to her own rage and her own body chemicals. That taught me dysfunctional ways of seeking safety. I would seek safety by trying to fix her when I was 10. I would seek safety by thinking really hard to come up with the best solution for her. And I'd be like, Mommy, you need to see a doctor. Mommy, you need medication. Mommy, you know, I got the answer. That's how I learned to relate to my first most important attachment figure, that I was in danger physically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and in order to make it better, I have to make her better. Not, oh, this is dangerous. Thank you so much. Great. This is great. And I repeat that pattern with the men that I am attracted to. Oh, you're dangerous? Oh, you might kill me? Literally. Oh, you're manic to the point of, you know, obviously manic speaks for itself. You know, I can fix you. My father died when I was 11. Sudden traumatic absence, sudden traumatic disappearance, sudden traumatic death, like right in front of my face, extreme grief. In my opinion, there is some grief that does not fully heal, although it can get much, much, much better. And for me, the death of my father is so severe that I have absolutely no idea how it affects me. It's just like, poof, gone. And I hope that as I continue to work my recovery, it becomes more tangible to me how the grief, well, I can say right now as I sit here that the grief manifested severely in my withdrawal process in monumental ways, and that what I'm attracted to in men is ultimately someone who will leave me in the sudden silence in the same way that my father left me in the sudden silence. And I know that because in my step work, I've uncovered that pattern over and over and over and over again. It's undeniable. I also was othered very quickly in my family. God made me how God made me. And I believe that God made me bright and happy and fun and really expressive and very artistic. And God just made me this little, like, this big, bright ball. And my family did not like that. And they were uncomfortable with me, and they put me down a lot, and they othered me. They really minimized me. And I learned to keep myself small. And I learned that I was less useful as a dynamic, creative individual. And I was more useful as a maybe like passive person. That's one way, passive person. And maybe I was more useful trying to come up with solutions for my mom, which of course actually never worked. And that brings me to actual solution for me, not for other people. If you're new, welcome. I'm so blown away by newcomers who come into this meeting. Even though I was that person, it's just amazing. I know what it takes to come into the room, and I'm so proud of you for being here. I think the program is simple. The instructions are simple. The work is complex, and it's worth it. The vulnerability is hard, but it's worth it. But the instructions are simple. Work the steps. The steps are in order for a reason. Number one, I am powerless, not just over sex and love addiction, but over absolutely pretty much everything, everyone, everything, all the time. And trying to control it makes my life unmanageable and is destructive and corrosive to what God intended for me. Step two, I came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, because the addiction cycle of sex and love addiction, of any addiction, the dysfunction is pure insanity, and it's no way to live. And also, it's not what God designed for us. I am reading this amazing book that my sponsor gave me, the steps we took, which is a basic breakdown of the 12 steps, regardless of what fellowship you're a part of. And it said in the book in step two, we're actually not designed, obviously self-will is what gets us in, that's a core basic principle of the 12 steps, self-will run riot is what gets us here. We're actually, this book says that we're not actually designed, we were never designed to live on self-will, that we are always, we've always been designed. I see you're unmuted. Timer, is that 15 minutes?
I've been afraid.
All right. Hey, I didn't have anything to be afraid of, right? yeah, it says we're not designed to live on self-will. We're actually designed to live through and with God's will. And this is said in the meetings a lot, and I find it to be very true, which is that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And I personally feel that the human element of us will that is dysfunctional will continue to repeat itself until we have discovered the spiritual tools that we need to pick up to return to essence, to find the true essence. And that is what I feel happened to me. So solution, steps, step work, get a sponsor, work the steps. Don't be picky, don't be shy. The moment is now. And that's another thing this book says. This is your moment. This is your moment. If you are here right now, this is your moment. Do not turn away. Do not doubt. Do not second guess. You are here for a reason. This is God's plan for you. Seize the moment. I know for me, when I came into the room, I did not have the luxury of anything. I was at death's door. And the second I came into the room, I knew I was never, ever, ever going to leave. You know, I was like, well, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. Cool. This is great. Solution, pray. There's this funny meme that always makes me laugh. It's like the text is this long, you know? And then it says what my sponsor said. And it's like, pray. And it's so true. I want to talk about sober dating because a year into my recovery, I'm sober dating, which is wild because I am, I don't like that. I never liked dating. And of course I'm a sex and love addict who never liked dating. Try to figure that one out. anorexia. So far, the foundational thing that has helped me to sober date, obviously, is the massive withdrawal that I went through a year ago and working the steps with my sponsor, outreach, and coming to meetings basically every day. That is what has given me legs to stand on. But I heard once in a meeting, someone said, my relationships belong to God. 2 minutes, thank you. My relationships belong to God, and God will decide how we will be of service to each other and for how long we will be of service to each other. That is the belief, foundational belief that I've taken into my sober dating experiences. It has really taken the burden off of me to try to begin things or end things, even though the impulse is still there to fucking bolt like all the time. Excuse me. I always go back to that phrase. And so far, in sober dating, I'm actually really enjoying the experience because I have so many tools to pick up. I have so many tools and I get to practice my tools in real time with real people. And I'm meeting people who I can practice these tools of recovery with. And I get to see how far I've come. Like the rubber meets the road when you start sober dating. It's not, and you know, of course, me being anorexic, I want to just be home and be in my little safety zone. But that's not what God wants for me. And I hear that in my prayers. So sober dating, actually, I can enjoy it because I have an amazing sponsor, because I have my God squad, because I have my dating plan. I have like bumper lanes. I call it bumper lanes. I have bumper lanes, and every day I practice step three, turning my will and my life over to my higher power. And every day I practice not needing answers and not controlling outcomes and not needing to figure anything out, because my relationships belong to my higher power, and my higher power will decide, and it will be very clear. Oh my gosh. Well, I'll just wrap up by saying that the messaging that I received when I was young was be small, be quiet, don't be annoying, you know? And now in recovery, I feel that my life is much bigger. I don't minimize myself as much. I try not to go beyond my side of the street. I try to just stay on my side of the street, and that keeps me sane. I follow the instructions that are laid out in the big book and that are laid out in SLA literature. I follow those simple instructions every day. I turn it over to God every day, and it's gotten me this far, and I think it's going to take me a lot farther. And I'll finish with this, which is what my sponsor said. Before she was my sponsor, I heard her say this, and I was like, that's the woman I want to work with. She said, I wake up with my life on my mind. And to me, that's freedom. Thank you all so much. Thanks for being part of my recovery.
Lori, real quick, what would you like the topic to be when we start shares?